Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
So I was talking about having a little bit of a break from social media in that little intro there when I was talking about my hot doctor boyfriend. I don't know if you've heard about him. With a really nice dick. And I tell you what, fuck, it was good having a week with, you know, an enforced no phone thing. That was absolute heaven. And I guess it's got a lot to do with this next topic that we're about to talk about. I don't know if you guys are across this. You know, there's been two huge events this year socially. And of course, one of them is COVID-19. And the other one is the Black Lives Matter movement that's, you know, gaining traction around the world. It's now the biggest movement to ever have happened in the United States as far as feet on the ground, protests and that sort of thing. But the downside of that, of course, is that it's been spinning a lot of hate speech on social media.
Oh my God.
And of course,
the big amount of stuff. Yeah.
It's horrific. Like, and we're seeing, you know, everyone's got that aunt or that fuckhead from high school or whatever that's posting this hate coming from as a result of the Black Lives Matter movement. Yeah. And it's actually spurred on this campaign, which is exciting, which is called Stop Hate for Profit. So obviously the biggest one for these theories and these conspiracy theories is Facebook. It's the one that seems to be the social media platform of choice for the haters, and it's
old white people platform.
That's where they're all at.
Because you can really easily create a network of people. You join Facebook groups of people that have a similar minds to you. You have friends that you add, and then their friends add you, and that sort of thing. So you can really believe on Facebook that the world agrees with you if you
want. Yeah, you get in your little bubble. Like an echo chamber.
So this campaign is mainly aimed at Facebook, but also other platforms as well. And they're basically calling for large companies to withdraw their sponsorship and their advertising from Facebook until Facebook actually does something about it. Yeah. So Zuckerberg, who I just think is evil incarnate, is finally, for the first time, because they've always had this sort of, they've always erred on the side of like, oh, it's free speech. And that, to me, you can only go so far with that, you know, until you're also a platform that's giving us a voice to hate speech as well. So don't bullshit me with your free speech thing. And also, Americans are so obsessed with this free speech thing. I don't know.
They're so obsessed. Every single video you see of a Karen with a phone, video recording, they're all just going on about their like rights and freedom of speech.
They're blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but I don't know why they're so stuck to that.
It's like all they can fucking spout and like say. It's so infuriating.
Yeah, if it means that your president can say the shit that he can say, then maybe it's time to get rid of the free speech. Anyway, so Zuckerberg's actually finally listening now because it's actually going to hurt his back pocket. So because these big companies like Starbucks and Ford and Coca-Cola are going to pull out for a month of marketing. Yeah. Honda, I think, Sony, some other ones, they're going to stop marketing on Facebook for a whole month. Zuckerberg's actually now coming forward and saying, you know, we're going to put warnings on certain posts and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they're still not going to...
all the adverts and stuff.
Well, to a certain degree. And still, that's only... We got to remember as well that there's different algorithms in different countries and different parts of the world. So a lot of people in the Middle East and Africa or North Africa are saying, you know, can we get your algorithms here because it's actually worse off, and can we get these things that you're introducing in Western Facebook, can we get them here? And a lot of LGBTI support groups and things like that in the Middle East are using examples. There's this viral Facebooker who has this campaign going on about if you think it's your right to act on sodomy, then it's my right to throw you off a roof. roof. So there's all this like awful campaigns going on that Facebook is allowing and is making money off. So these groups are saying, you know, can we get great
have some of that.
Coca-Cola's not advertising in Facebook, but can we have some of that as well? Yeah.
It's nice to see really big brands like Starbucks, Ford, Coca-Cola, Honda and Sony like that are pulling the ads from Facebook because fuck Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. Yeah. I'd say let Facebook burn. I don't even care. I don't use Facebook.
Like, yeah, I was like, do I just delete Facebook now? Because like these people just don't give a shit. And like it's really annoying also because like this isn't the first time this has been brought to Mark Zuckerberg's attention. Like it was like 8 months ago, AOC was like grilling him about it in an interview and was just like, well, you're pretty much telling me that I can spread like false information about someone that I'm campaigning against and you're not going to do anything about it. It's like, oh, no, that's not what I'm saying. It's like, no, that's exactly what you're saying. Like, you're saying that you're not going to do anything about the misinformation that's being spread and you're not going to do anything about the hate speech. It's all about money. And that's why they're reacting now, because they're losing all
this. It's interesting, though. I mean, Twitter, I think, who have flagged some of Trump's tweets, hidden some of Trump's tweets, turned off replies, and I think they even turned off retweets. I do feel like that was sort of them sort of putting their foot down a little bit about how much they were going to let him get away with. They have blocked
like others. Obviously, like, struck a chord with him because he was, like, coming for them and saying, like, furious. Threatening them and stuff. And I was like, because this is his main platform. Yeah. It's so ridiculous that the president of the United States' main platform for communication with the public is via Twitter. So thank God they stepped in.
Yeah, which is it's a privately owned platform. So they're allowed to create whatever rules that they want for stuff to go on there. And then we as a society can respond to that. And if our response is the president of the United States is a fuckhead, then they're allowed to go and put blocks on his tweets.
That's it.
But it's interesting. Sorry, just to go back to something you were saying, Kyle, is like good on Starbucks and good on Coca-Cola. It feels so weird saying that because they are cheap companies. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like they're not good company. They are profiting off some pretty evil stuff. But I think, you know, the way I always have a bit of a pragmatic view when it comes to these sorts of situations. Okay. And we do live in the world that we currently live in. And yes, there's a lot of us trying to change that, but at the moment that's how we live. So if we do have to make change by campaigning to these big companies and getting them to withdraw money, and that's how the world works, then great. Yeah, you're right. Like, good on them for listening.
Yeah,
to
well, I guess like with those really big names, and they have such influence, and will influence smaller companies, so it'll make it the cool thing to do. So,
I think a lot of these smaller LGBT groups in the Middle East that are sort of raising these concerns have some really valid points as well that are being overlooked by Western society. I don't know if you've seen it, and don't go looking for it, please, because it's the most horrific, gut-churning sort of thing that you'd see. But there are these videos that are being used by extremists that, you know, follow Muslim Sharia law that are calling for LGBT people to be murdered and uploading videos of people being thrown off buildings and people being stoned in streets. They have marketing teams literally putting these together, putting it together and uploading it, saying that this is what will happen if you don't follow the rules and, you know, pay your 2.5% income and to the church and that sort of thing. So, you know, the fact that this large American company is making money off that sort of stuff, that they're happy to take that money, but then they're also happy to take my money to promote Granny Bingo. It's really morally and ethically incredibly fucked, I think.
Do we really think it should be up to all these like really big companies and stuff to monitor themselves like this and to decide on their own that like, oh, we should take this down? Do we think that it should be up to the actual people to like vote for
this? I think it should be up to the government. I mean, just watching what happened with the Nine Towers in Melbourne being in lockdown over the last several days.
Oh, my goodness.
Seeing the way the community was able to galvanize together so quickly and get there because voices were being heard that wouldn't have been heard. So I'm not saying, you know, social media is evil and that sort of thing as a general concept, but we haven't had time yet to develop rules about what is okay, what information is okay to be presenting to people as fact. And I think that that's where government needs to be stepping in. And I guess that effectively, to answer your question, means the people, because the people need to be lobbying the government.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because the thing is, like, obviously, it's up to those companies whether or not they have whatever information they want on their websites. But it should be, like, government mandated that it has to be factual and it can't be just made up lies or hate speech towards people. Like, absolutely, if you want to, like, have both sides of an argument on your platform, go right ahead and do that.
But it needs to be flagged as...
what Twitter did with Trump when he said that when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Like, they, I think they left it there because, like, it was a historical thing that you should see that this man is saying these fucked up
things. What they did is like a pop-up. It's the same as if you, you know, when you see like a graphic video on Facebook and it's
blurred
because it's as of a graphic nature and you can click it to unblur it. What they did with Trump's tweet, and I think it was the first time, was the first one, but I think he was the first person they ever did to about a year ago with something else along the same lines, was that they blurred it out, they turned off responses and replies and that sort of thing and said, this tweet breaches our rules, but has been left up as, you know, it's a political leader.
I think that's smart. So it's not spreading or anything like wildfire, and it's not,
it's
like
coming with a
like all these hate people, but like you can still see it as like a historic, like as it's like the fucking red receipts, whatever, like you can see he did say this thing on the internet, but it's not good, and it's being,
I think, people underestimate too how bad that quote was. So he was quoting, I think it was a mayor from 1964 who was talking about how the police were going to go out and patrol black areas in America. So he was really drawing on that patriotic racist following that he has, which is why I'm so glad that, that Twitter decided to take action on that one.
Yeah. Thanks,
specifically, Twitter. But he has a whole lot more that he needs to, you know.
Oh, for sure.
He needs to just step off a cliff, please.
But yeah, so like Twitter, they're doing their thing and they're doing okay, but obviously Facebook still have a long way to go and there's still a lot that they can do. Yeah, like, come on, Facebook, get it together. But yeah, hopefully the Stop Hate for Profit campaign does do something more effective in the long run for, I guess, everybody that's using Facebook. And
yeah, all the mums posting like motivational quotes on the timeline.
Motivational quotes. But yeah, fingers crossed this makes a big difference for the future.
Yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tom of Finland. Are you guys familiar?
I'm familiar with Tom of Collingwood. Where do you live?
Tom of Carlton.
Please do a Finnish accent.
I don't know what a Finnish accent sounds like.
It's that kind of Swede, anyway. That kind of like...
This is so bad. This is like my... This is where I'm from. I don't.
Yeah, you're a blue-eyed, blonde, white person.
Yeah, thank you. Well, yeah, for any of our listeners that have no idea what I'm talking about, when I say Tom of Finland, I guarantee you would have seen his work before. It's those often black and white drawings of very muscular, usually men, and quite often with a big bulge in their pants, usually topless, quite often in uniforms or cut off denim. I guess people probably associated a lot with the 80s because of the style, but you could almost argue that the artwork influenced the style of the 80s. Of gay culture in the 80s rather than the other way around.
Sailors and things. The sailors.
Yeah, like lots leather daddies, like with police hats and like, like leather chaps and things like that.
Yeah. But I never really knew the history of it. In fact, the first time I ever saw it, I think I've told you guys about how when I was like 17, I snuck off to the what's called the gay bookshop on Commercial Road when we used to have a gay mecca in Melbourne. And I don't think it's there anymore, but it was just a, you know, basically a porn shop. But out the front, it had this little A-frame, and on the A-frame was all these Tom of Finland characters. And I'd walked past it a million times with my parents when we were like going out for lunch or shopping or whatever. But yeah, when I was like 17, I snuck out of home and like made up all these excuses to different people about where I was so no one would know and caught the train into South Yarra and went in there. So yeah, that was like literally some of the first gay
iconography.
Thank you. That I ever saw. Yeah. And then when I saw that it was the a couple of weeks ago would have been his 100th birthday, I thought it might be interested interesting to look into it. So do you guys know anything about the history of it at all?
Yeah, well, like, I knew him. He was from Finland. But no, but he was actually, like, so interesting, and, like, his whole inspirations behind everything, reading up about him, was very cool.
Yeah, well, I'd always assumed that he was, I guess, in his 20s in the 80s.
Yeah.
Just because I've always associated his work with that time. So I was quite surprised. He was actually obviously born in 1920 in Finland. And, of course, that means grew up in Nazi Europe. And so some of his first sexual experiences were with German soldiers, which he sort of has hinted towards, and a lot of people have said is probably got a lot to do with his fetish for men in uniforms.
Yeah.
Because of a lot of his imagery even included Nazi uniforms as well as other various uniforms. I think, Luke, you said sailors before.
Yeah. I remember reading that he drew people even in Nazi uniforms, and he said it wasn't anything political, but it was just purely based on how they look, because the uniforms were so hot. So I'm like, okay.
Oh, don't say that.
But it's true. But yeah, that you're right. You're right, Kyle. He was very clear to say that he despised Nazi ideology, but his artwork was all about male intimacy, and a lot of his experiences when he was younger had been with men in Nazi uniform, Nazis in Nazi uniforms.
Oh, PS, side note, can I just say, if you're after a man in a hot uniform, Google the Spanish army. You will thank me later.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit. They are beautiful. And their uniforms are so good. I wish he was around to do some drawings of that.
I know.
I think I found really... Oh, sorry.
Sorry, yeah, no, keep going.
I thought that was a pause.
Take
no, I talked a lot.
Take it.
Okay,
cow.
No, sorry. A thing I found really interesting was that his depiction of all these gay men was so, like, beefy and muscular and strong. And it was because he was trying to flip gay people's image on its head, because so many people knew gay guys as, like, really weak and, like, thin and, I don't know, just like a weak image.
Yeah.
So, like, I like that he decided to be like, fuck you, and was rebellious, and he drew these big, powerful, strong, muscular men.
It was really cool. Obviously, a lot of the only depictions of gay men that a lot of people saw were through things like, at that time, were vaudeville and film, like, you know, old films and cartoons and that sort of thing. And quite often you'd have the camp villain in those 50s films, or you know, going back to his early childhood, the vaudevillian plays, or the evil villains in the cartoons that would always be long and slender and very Disney evil villain. So it was a really interesting way to rebel against that. And I guess for him to say, no, actually my sexual experiences have been like this, and this is what I wanted to be.
Suck it.
He also did a lot of leather stuff and a lot of biker stuff, which resonated with that culture. And coincidentally, that culture was taking off a lot after World War II. And so a lot of other gay men that wanted to rebel against this depiction that had been this sort of Oscar Wilde depiction that had been promoted of them joined this bikey culture and this leather culture, which again sort of propelled his art, which propelled the culture, which propelled the art, a sort of self-propelling kind of thing, I guess you could say.
A self-propelling prophecy.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The other thing I found really interesting, and I did know about these magazines, but I didn't know he was in them. Have you heard of the Beefcake magazines?
Yeah.
So I didn't really know a lot about them, but they were
cookbooks?
Magazines. Sorry.
Yes. Said cookbooks?
Literal
not cookbooks, no. I've actually got one. I'll show it to you. It's fast. I've got an Australian version of it. So it was when they weren't allowed to print gay porn. So they printed these fitness magazines under the guise of them being like exercise. And we're talking the 50s and 60s here, under the guise of them being health magazines or muscle
very healthy
magazines and that sort of thing. But they were just mainly pictures of scantily clad men.
Posing.
Tiny underwears and lots of muscles. And
It's called Men's Health now.
Exactly. So a lot of his stuff was getting, a lot of the first stuff he started getting printed was in those magazines. And it was more about his, instead of, you know, the images we're probably more familiar with of men grabbing their cocks and that sort of thing, it was more muscular men sort of doing stretches and exercising, not necessarily being as overtly sexual. But then in the 70s, when they were allowed to start printing that stuff, he started creating a lot more graphic, erotic sort of comic books and even started exhibiting a lot of his stuff in mainstream exhibitions, which is, I think, pretty incredible.
Do you find it a bit sad that it's now, like, so mainstream, this, like, such an underground, rebellious
And now it's just commonly known in every day.
The first time I saw Tom of Finland was, like, crocheted on, like, a pillow
cover or something.
You always see those those rip-off ones on pillows. Like
every
girl who thinks she's really like she just loves gays always.
Oh god, it really cheapens it.
I've never been to a kick-ons at a girl's place that loves gays that hasn't had one of those.
I have like a really distinct memory of a Tom and Finland print when I first moved to Melbourne. It was the day before my birthday, so I was like, you know what, I'm going out on my birthday, even though I don't have any friends. But I went out with like two people, and we went to the Peel for the first time. And the Peel has one behind the bar, like on the like behind the front one as you walk in. Yeah,
I'm going to assume it's not an original.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, I just have this like really distinct memory of just standing at the bar, looking at this picture, and being like, "Wow, they do it differently in Melbourne." Like, it was really like campy and like cool, but I was like, "This is awesome!" And I was just like sitting there thinking, "I was like, God, I hope I did the right. I hope I did the right move and make some friends."
Did you jack it?
Yeah, I've got it now in my room.
Have you ever jerked off to a drawing before?
Yeah, for sure.
What was it, a drawing? Did you draw it?
No. I really, really like erotic, like fantasy sort of.
But hentai? Like
tentacle porn?
Yeah. What you would like, your 50 Shades of Grey, but like gay version. Stuff like that. But like there are some like different comic strips and stuff that I found over like the last few years that have been actually really, really hot. And I'm just like, no, I love this sort of stuff. This is great from time to time.
I love it too. I love erotica. Yeah. Like I jack it for that stuff all the time.
I think the first time that I saw Tom of Finland, like it was just before I came out, I would go to the newsagents and buy the DNA magazines in secret.
Oh, DNA.
And like they had like a little excerpt sort of thing in the middle of it, which was great. And like I remember seeing those and I was just like, wow, like just these drawings of these men are really, really hot. And like the fact that it came from someone of a, like an earlier time when these things weren't okay was just mind-blowing to me. But no, like I think it's beautiful and amazing. Mm. And I love that one way that someone described it, that because there is like a foundation in America where they sort of preserve all of the Tom of Finland stuff, and one of the guys there described the imagery as like strong and powerful but like with really kind faces. Like I like that. That's very really true. Nice.
I think it's also amazing that the journey that it went through from being, you know, illegal and had to be sort of printed covertly through to being exhibited in main, like a lot of major art galleries around the world now own Tom of Finland pieces. It's quite an incredible journey, and over a period of time where a lot of changes happened for gay men. And it's also meant that, you know, artists today, just thinking locally, people like Samuel Leighton Dorr, who we've shared a lot of stuff from our Gays Revolting page, it means that people like that are able to express themselves freely in their visual art. And I think that's a pretty incredible thing.
Mm. Do you think he inspired the village people's aesthetic?
For sure.
Yeah. Because that was like the same kind of, same
That culture definitely... The bikie culture post-World War II sort of grew throughout the 60s and 70s and became quite big in the 80s would definitely have influenced the village people. And I would say that, like I was saying before, it's sort of a bit of a him influencing the culture and the culture influencing him and until it got to that crescendo.
Mm. Are you guys into, like, because of that, do you think you guys are into, like, leather and stuff like that? Like, are you attracted to leather play? Or like, do you have harnesses or anything? Like, I've never worn a leather harness, like anything like
you
that.
You did in the photo shoot. You had a harness.
Yeah.
No, it's not a leather harness. Oh, that's like a fucking ASOS like seatbelt. It wasn't a leather harness.
Yeah.
I got the latex stuff. I like latex. I've never really. The thing is a lot of those things nowadays feel like their own little clicks and scenes that I'm not really a part of, unfortunately. But I have some of the gear. I don't know if it's because of seeing porn and erotic art as a young person that it influenced my sexual provocation.
I definitely appreciate guys in leather and guys in uniforms and that sort of stuff. And I own a harness and a couple of leather pieces, and I've been to some leather parties, but I would feel like I'm cheating if I was to call myself a leather queen, because I know those queens that are into leather spend a fortune and are
they're really
experts in how to look after it, and it's actually part of the culture is looking after your leather hobby, and it's not just about the kinky stuff, it's also about the jackets and the the chats and all that sort of stuff as well. So I wouldn't, I would feel like I was cheating my way into it if I was to say that I was a leather queen. But I mean, it's definitely a fun scene. It's a very interesting scene, a fascinating scene.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing I enjoy more than talking about some dirty pictures for a little bit, but
yeah.
That's our after show for tonight. Thank you so much for subscribing to our Patreon or becoming one of our patrons.
Thank you, everybody.
We will have after shows and live streams and merch available. Yeah. And
it's just getting better for you guys, really.
Yeah. If the world ever gets back to upside down times, we might even have live shows again. You know,
oh my God.
So, fingers crossed. And that's because of you guys supporting us. So, thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you.
And you boys want to say bye to the
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.